Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. Our building is located at 125 Hilltopper Avenue. We hope you'll come and meet with us this morning at 9 o'clock and every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock for Bible classes. We have our morning worship services at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings, and then the evening service at 6 o'clock. So 10 and 6 for worship on Sundays. And then we have Bible study on Wednesday evenings at 7 o'clock. And come and bring a Bible. We do focus upon the Bible. When we teach, we follow the Bible. When we preach, we follow the Bible. And so this is our source book. This is our guide of faith and practice. And that's exactly, and we do that because that's exactly what the Bible demands. The scriptures are given for our guide, our guidance. As we read in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 17, the inspired scriptures he referenced in verse 16 are profitable for those necessary things, things that relate to life and godliness, Peter said. So I think if you're familiar with your Bible, and particularly with your New Testament, you will be comfortable in our classes and listening to our sermons. So come and meet with us. We would love to meet you. Perhaps you're new to the area and haven't affiliated with a particular church. We'd like for you to come and meet with us and see what you think about our approach to the Bible, but also our concept of religion and our concept of service to God, based upon conservatism, a conservative approach to the scriptures, that they are inspired of God and that we are to use the Bible as our exclusive guide of faith and practice. I want this morning to pick up in our study where we left off last week. Last week we were talking about the question, I raised the question, why false religion? Why so many false religions? And the first question, of course, is obviously where you have to start. The second question is the result of the problems that raise the first question. People just continue to go down this wrong path, and so the number of false religions continues to multiply. That's been happening, of course, for centuries. But why is that? Why is it? Last week, we started off talking about Galatians chapter 6 and verses 12 and 13. There are a couple of reasons given in those two verses. Paul talked about the false teachers of his day, the Judaizers, and he said, as we noted last week and studied this for a while, he said that as many as desire to make a fair show in the flesh constrain you to be circumcised, and only so that they can glory in your flesh, last part of verse 13. So what's he talking about there? Well, two things, really. Numbers and the pride that comes to a person or to people, to a group of people, could be to an institution, to a church, in having attracted or convinced other people to join with them and support them. It's like a drug to people, to be able to win people over to their way of thinking. There should be true joy, spiritual joy, when people are converted. There's rejoicing among the angels of God in heaven. We read in Luke chapter 15 when one is restored or when one is converted, but there should be the same type of feeling among us too. So that's one thing. But a sense of personal pride in that they have become and somehow affiliated with me makes them a follower of me, a disciple of me personally, that is sinful and wrong. That motive is corrupt. That motive is false. I just pointed out recently in Bible class that in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, we need to remember our place in the work of helping others to be converted. We don't personally convert others. We plant we water. But who gives the increase? God. Paul said God gives the increase. So as teachers, we may plant and water. That's our role in that. But ultimately, it's going to come down to other factors. And then salvation is actually the work of God. God is the one who does that. God is the one who forgives sins. You and I don't do that. The Catholics may think that their priest can do that to absolve people of their sins. They cannot do that. No human is capable of that, and to attribute such power to a man is sinful and wrong. The Jews were right when they said, who can forgive sins but God only? And of course, Jesus forgave sins because he was God. In the gospel accounts of the healing there, where he said, take up your bed and walk, or he could say, son, your sins are forgiven. And this demonstrated that God was able to forgive sins and that Jesus was God. But we are mere men. We are not deity, and we don't have that capability. What can we do? We can show people. We can guide them through the scriptures to show them what they can do, what they can believe, and what they can do that will then allow God to forgive them of their sins. But that's in God's realm. If that's God's, as they say, the old preachers used to say, God's end of the stick. God's end of the stick, and we don't need to be whittling on God's end of the stick. So, friends, we need to keep in mind some limitations here. So we talked about Galatians 6, and then and also, lest they should suffer persecution. That's another reason why you see false religion. False religion keeps people from being persecuted. Because false religion, you subscribe to and you promote only positions, doctrines, beliefs, and practices that people like. And they're going to like you for that. They're going to like you. You know, when churches offer all kinds of crazy social programs that have nothing to do with why Jesus came to the earth and suffered and bled and died on the cross, when they offer all of these different programs, like, you know, child daycare, churches do this all the time. It's very popular. When they have the Mother's Day Out programs and they take care of the kids so moms can have some time for, what does that have to do with the work of the church? Where would you read about any such thing in the New Testament? You don't read about anything like that in the New Testament. You see something opposite of that, the responsibility of parents to guide and raise and discipline and train their children. That you see the opposite of it. Rather than turning that over to the local church or the leaders of some local church, you see it be the responsibility of the parents. But you do not see it to be the responsibility of the church. But what about these programs? Well, they are very popular. What about church programs that just feed people? Not people who are necessarily hungry, but providing social meals, just social entertainment-based meals. Well, there's no authority for that in the New Testament. The church can help needy Christians, but these are Christians that don't have food. And so that's a different situation, isn't it? That's not Christians who just, you know, enjoy eating together. We can do that, but that's an individual practice. The church is nowhere authorized to do that. The same is true with the church providing funding for those who are not Christians. There is no Bible passage for that. No place you can go in the Bible. Some individual passages are misrepresented and applied to local churches, and people then are led to believe that local churches are entrusted with that responsibility or given that allowance or authority. But they're wrong. All you have to do is look at the context of the passages in James chapter 1 or Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, and it's easy to demonstrate that. You don't have to be very proficient in Scripture to be able to read and see what he's talking about in James chapter 1 in verses 22 through 27 or Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10. But anyway, why are these things done? Not because people are trying to carefully follow the Scriptures. They obviously aren't. But they're trying to attract people and make people happy with what they're doing. to make people happy with what they're doing. And so we talked about that in Galatians 6, 12, and 13. Let's move on today. Sometimes people just want to distinguish themselves from other people in order to keep their following, to keep their people. So they will go down this path of a false practice or false practices in order to keep those people. This is exactly what you see with Jeroboam in 1 Kings chapter 12. It's exactly what you see. What did he become concerned about? Well, he became concerned in 1 Kings 12 and verse 27 that if he allowed the people of Israel to go back to Jerusalem, their hearts would be turned to Rehoboam and to Judah and to the worship there in Jerusalem. And so what did he do? He invented a whole new religious practice. And so there are a couple of related overlapping points here. Sometimes people will invent a new religion, but it actually, since it is different from the religion of God, it is a false religion. They'll invent that new false religion in order to maintain their crowds, but in order to keep them from going somewhere else. For example, what did Jeroboam do after he made this decision based upon concern that the hearts of the people would revert back to Jerusalem and back to Rehoboam? Well, he said, you know what? We have some things that are a little different. We're not going to necessarily take priests of the tribe of Levi and of the house of Aaron. What we're going to do is make priests just basically of anyone who are not necessarily of the sons of Levi, verse 31 of 1 Kings 12. That's how it happens. That's how it begins. People will sort of construct their religion, their new religion, and they'll have different practices. And then people become accustomed to those different practices. Now, what did this involve? Well, the setting up of golden calves, verse 28, at Dan and Bethel. Because we don't want people to have to travel a long far. What if you lived in the south versus in the north? Well, you might want to go to Bethel rather than to Dan. That's an appeal to convenience. You ever hear people sometimes talk about, well, you have to drive a little too far for worship? Now, they'll drive however far they need to for their entertainment. They'll drive to go see a movie. They'll drive to other towns in order to go shopping. Or maybe there's a particular store they want to go to, and they'll drive to another town. My wife and I do this from time to time. And there's nothing wrong with it unless you're also not driving to worship God because you have to drive more than 15 minutes or 20 minutes or something. We need to be very careful, friends, about this and where it leads and what it says. What if there are no faithful places, churches, where I can worship with the saints who are practicing the truth in my immediate area? Well, I may have to travel. People had to travel a long ways to go to Jerusalem. Jeroboam said, we're not going to do that. We'll set up golden calves at Dan and Bethel. The other problem with that is it was false worship. It was idolatry. We'll be talking about that just in a minute. It's a totally separate point. But related. So you have the false religion, the idol worship, the worship of golden calves. But on top of that, you have this matter of an appeal to convenience, right? What would be more convenient for me? So, First Kings chapter 12 there in verse 28. And then you have the making of priests, not of the sons of Levi. But that's not enough, because don't we need some feast days? Don't we need some special days? But we don't want to set those up like the other religion, like the religion you read about in the Bible. No, we'll do that differently. We will, rather than, for example, having a religious holy day on the 14th day of the first month, we'll have a religious day on the 14th day. I thought it was, every time I read this, I think it's funny. 15th day of the 8th month. Now, you know, Leviticus 23 talks about the three feast days of the Jews and different times of the year, and you count from one day to the other to get Pentecost and things like that. They had that. That was all stipulated. Jeroboam said, we're going to do this differently. We're going to have something different. And that's exactly what they did. So why do people form false religions? This leads us to my next point, to do what they want to do. To do what they want to do. That is basically, when you boil it down, what it often comes down to. People just want that. Yes, the other points, of course, are absolutely true. You have people trying to strive for numbers, just physical numbers of people, of so-called converts or so-called disciples. And you have people trying to avoid, you know, controversy. We won't take a certain stand on that. I know churches of Christ. Sadly, I have in my lifetime known way too many of them. Way too many churches of Christ where they won't take a definitive stand on certain moral and doctrinal issues because they know they're going to lose numbers. As soon as you start preaching the truth on that or the whole counsel of God on that subject, you will lose numbers. They know it. And so they say, we're not going to preach on that. I know churches right here in Warren County that have that policy. Some have just members have just admitted it. It's despicable. They're just admitting to not practicing the faith. They're admitting to not following the Bible. They're admitting to not respecting Bible authority. It's really remarkable to stop and think about it. How can you call yourself a Christian, claim Jesus is Lord, and have such a policy as that? That, well, you know, I can't teach that here, I can't preach that here, because that would upset people and they would leave. You know, really, people ought to have a little more faith in the power of the gospel, which we just talked about in Bible class recently, in Romans 1, verse 16. Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. We ought to have a little more confidence in the power of the gospel to convict the hearts of sinners and convert them and bring their thinking in line with truth. Wouldn't that be better? Wouldn't that be more profitable for people? Yes. But people don't have that confidence, or they have this great fear of losing numbers. And so their spirituality is dictated. Their level of faith is dictated and limited to whether or not they're going to lose some of their numbers in their local church. That's just pathetic. I'll just go ahead and say it. It is not the exercise of genuine faith. I can tell you that. But some people just want to do what they want to do. And you see an example of this not only with Jeroboam in the Old Testament in 1 Kings 12, and by the way, many other examples we could look at if you were sort of look at idolatry and all of the various aspects of idolatry that's talked about in the Old Testament. Because if we start going down that path, it leads to another point, and these are related to each other again. You have not only doctrinal errors, but moral errors. In other words, why do people form false religions? Why do they? Well, they want to do what they want to do in religion, and they want to do what they want to do, be able to freely do, with a clean conscience, morally. So they want to feel good about what they do doctrinally and teach doctrinally, and they want to feel good about what they do morally in their own personal lives. That's why you have so many false religions. Now, the constantly growing, increasing number of false religions is because some people are able or willing to go farther than other people in this regard. Some people are willing to be more loose in their standards than are other people. For example, you have one person say who will say, "Oh, no, 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 we teach here that homosexuality and gay marriage is wrong. But now when it comes to abortion," they'll say, I think that may be a personal choice." And then now we've got groups that are saying, "Well, abortion is perfectly fine. That's, you know, that's not an actual living being outside of the womb, and so we can't define that as life and personality and all of that. So we can't condemn abortion." You know, people have reached this conclusion, call themselves religious, call themselves Christians, who have reached this conclusion. And they say, "Oh, you know, human sexuality is a personal thing. And we don't want to condemn transgenderism or homosexuality." You see where I'm going with this? Some people are willing to go farther than other people when it comes to compromise. And that's why you just continually have another religion being formed, another religion being formed. But you know, the Bible talks about this. A lot of people think that just because they think about spiritual topics from time to time, that means that they're religious. They do, don't they? I mean, it's like the study of angelology. I always think it's funny we invent that word for a study of angels. Maybe intriguing and interesting. There are some things that are actually said about angels, the role of angels. Hebrews 1 talks about angels, and the Old Testament talks about angels. Galatians 3 talks about angels in relationship to the revelation of the law of Moses. And so, yes, the Bible has some things to say about angels. I have a sermon on angels. I don't think that the sermon that I preach on angels is probably as fascinating as some of the fabricated stuff that people come up with today on it, speculations they have about it. But, you know, it's just factual. You can do a factual study of angels, and it's good to study any topic that the Bible talks about. You know, we read about the role of angels in the New Testament, helping the apostles, and Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. I mean, we can do a lesson like that. But too many people want to use the study of angels as sort of their spirituality or their thoughts about angels. And that's really their obsession. And they don't really have anything else. And people do this with the subject of prayer. Prayer is commended to us. It is commanded for us in the New Testament. We are to be persistent in prayer, or pray without ceasing, be instant in prayer, Romans 12. There are many prayer passages. There are passages that describe and talk about prayer and qualify who it is that will be listened to by God, and that's a great study. I've got a series that I do on prayer. But then people will talk about prayer life. Some people seem to have concluded that prayer is the sum total of religion. I'm a praying person, or I'm a praying man. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that people pray, but that doesn't make you saved. I've told people, you can pray until you're blue in the face for God to forgive you of your sins, and if you haven't met the conditions of salvation, you could pray until you die and still go to hell. You could pray every day, having not obeyed the instructions of the New Testament. Just think about that. Having never been obedient to the faith. Think about that. And so, what are we talking about? Well, that's what we're talking about, what Colossians 2 is talking about. In verse 18, "Let no one rob you of the prize, delighting in self-abasement and worship of angels." Oh, these people were religious. They worshipped angels. Now, what? Where would you go in the instructions of God to find the idea of worshiping angels? I remember John being told by an angel in the book of Revelation, "Don't do this," and commanded him to rather worship God. "Don't worship me. I'm just an angel." So, that's a problem. But But Paul said that some at Colossae had been affected by some of these doctrines, and they self-abasement. You know, there's a difference between abasement, between humility, and just fabricated abasement, self-abasement. Then you have the worship of angels. And taking his stand on visions, emptily puffed up by his fleshly mind. Oh, he's proud of what he's doing here. Look at me. Look what I'm doing in my religion. Some false religions, friends, are just because people want to do what they want to do. They feel good about it. They have instructions. They've fabricated. Touch not, taste not, handle not, verse 21. But Paul said all these things are to perish with the using, according to the commandments and teachings of men. Human commandments, human teachings. These things indeed have an appearance of wisdom. Oh, would you say that, well, they're very religious. They're worshiping angels all the time, and, you know, they're doing things that that look like they're debasing themselves and maybe avoiding certain otherwise justifiable pleasures like eating food, giving up food, you know, maybe they're making all kinds of physical sacrifices. He said they have an appearance of wisdom and self-made worship and self-abasement, severity to the body. Oh, I'm gonna go without food for several days. I'll avoid a lot of things, doing a lot of things that I want to do. Paul said, but are of no value against fleshly indulgence. Of no value. So you can fabricate your own religion and it be completely pointless. And Jesus told the people in Matthew 15, related to that in verses 8 and 9, especially verse 9, in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Now, friends, I want you to think about that. So, a lot of false religion comes from people. It's just a product of people wanting to do what they want to do in the name of spirituality or the name of religion. Jeroboam, the people of Colossians chapter 2, and you see it all through the Bible. There are many examples of that. But I think the area that we need to end on here is probably would gravitate to the top as being one of the most obvious reasons for it. That is, people want to be able to freely and in a good conscience practice the morality that they like. That's a problem. That was why idolatry came to be, by the way. Idolatry, you read about it in the Old Testament all the time, frequently. The idolatry was practiced by heathen nations and then picked up by the Jews on different occasions. Because what idolatry does is allow you to sculpt, create, fashion your own deity, your own god. A god who will do what? A God who will always approve of what you want. And that's what false religion does. False religion is designed to approve of you regardless of what you do. Because there will always be a justification for it. And when you leave the Bible standard, there is, as the old proverb talks about, a casting off of restraint. They are not restrained. They can do whatever they want to do. So they can practice various things. You can practice things ranging from theft to consumption of alcohol or illicit drugs to even practicing abortion or homosexuality. About anything you want to do, you can justify once you have created your own God, your own religion. And that is a problem for people today. That's where too many are. They want to salve their conscience by being able to think of themselves as religious, but they don't want any restraints or restrictions placed upon them. I'm out of time this morning. We thank you for tuning in. We hope you'll tune in for our study next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.